Is yours in order?
Mm-hmm.
Was I supposed to do that?
Ascending and descending order.
All right, this might be interesting. I might kind of have to do this on the fly.
Of course it's in order. Why wouldn't it be?
I don't know.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. You are my co-host, Keith Foster, who lives in San Diego.
Yes, and what's up? I'm here with my co-host, Cassidy Robinson, from Los Angeles, California, the city of angels, the boulevard of broken dreams,
I think that's all you got.
That's it.
That's all you got.
That's all the nicknames it has, right?
Probably not.
Hollywood Land.
You have been a podcasting fiend lately.
I've guested on a couple podcasts. I just guested on the Adamant podcast with Adam Connie. It was his 100th episode. That was fun. We talked about this podcast a lot.
I listened to it. I think the highlight is when he lets us know that we are surprisingly not racist, given that we were doing a review of Spike Lee's She's Gotta Have It, which I guess was the first episode of ours that he listened to, him being an African American. He lets us off the hook and says how not racist we are. And then you proceed to white-splain to him the different kinds of racism.
Yeah, and I totally eat my own tongue.
Yeah, your foot directly in mouth.
It's pretty great. Here's the thing, though, since we're talking about race.
Let's stop there. Let's stop right there.
Yeah, I should probably stop.
Yeah. But also, you did an episode of Almost Educational, which should be dropping the same day this one does.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick and I did we did a draft of the best Twilight Zone episodes ever, and it was a lot of fun. We just talked Twilight Zone for like 2 hours.
A lot of listing and ranking this week.
Yeah, I feel like that's where I personally excel as.
Yeah,
a critic is by lining up things that have nothing in common and arbitrarily assigning them numbers, even though art is subjective.
Right. I think it was Louis Vertel who said on Twitter one time that listing things is like thinking, but easier. The reason I bring that up today, we're going to be doing our top 10 and bottom 5 of 2017. It's the new year. And this is technically the second podcast we've done or released in the year, but the last one was released on the first, so that barely counts.
Yeah, we still had Christmas movies to talk about.
I had a ton of stuff to catch up with, which I'm very proud of myself because I'm looking at my list here, my little short list that I wrote at work on the back of a receipt of the movies I still had to see. And the only ones I didn't see out of this list of like 11 movies... was Coco, The Killing of the Sacred Deer, Phantom Thread, which that one I really should have seen, but I didn't. War for the Planet of the Apes, The Beguiled, and Trainspotting 2.
You said the only ones I didn't see, and I was expecting you to list like one or two movies, and you still had a list.
But I managed to see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the ones that are on this list since I've written it. And the
stuff
that
reviews are lost in time, like teardrops in rain.
Well, some of these we did talk on the show. But yeah. But yeah, so is there anything else that that definitely won't be on your list that you're a little ashamed you didn't get to go out and see?
There is stuff that I am bummed that I didn't get to see. I think Call Me By Your Name was probably the big one, just because I've heard so much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, my top 10 list was pretty tight as it was, so
yeah.
I don't really need more movies. I saw the last one on my list. I was like, yeah, I'm good once I saw this. Mm-hmm. I got my list.
Mm-hmm.
Even as it is, I have 5 honorable mentions that just barely got cut today.
Mm.
And there's a theme that I think you'll recognize once I start listing them off.
Maybe. Before we get to that, I did want to mention that on our Facebook page, and if people aren't following that, they should at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Follow us.
Yeah, there. Way to interact with us, listeners.
Mm, we got a lot of responses.
This is your payoff.
We got a lot of responses.
This is your reward.
And I wanted to mention what other people had as their favorite movies of the year. I asked kind of a general poll. And
just so everyone knows, who did post and is listening right now,
mm-hmm.
I'm judging you.
And people, and I guess this is, I should just say this just as a thing, but if you like or comment on our post, it gets seen by more people. So even if you just are like, I don't know, whatever, like, If you just hit the like button on one of our posts, whether it's an episode or something like this or one of our news items, it ends up being seen by your friend groups and blah, blah, blah. We can get more interaction. Ashley Hitchcock, friend of the show, Ashley Hitchcock, her favorite movies of the year were Blade Runner 2049. Really? Wonder Woman. okay, you're doing a joke now. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Hard pass.
Okja and Coco.
Okja!
Thor Ragnarok, Kingsman, The Golden Circle, which we reviewed together. She was on our show.
Yeah.
And The Last Jedi.
She says Thor Ragnarok, Kingsman, Golden Circle, and The Last Jedi were fun.
I guess those are her runner-ups.
Yeah. That's what I got from the message. Mm-hmm.
Down below we have Diana Falcon. She said her favorite movies of the year were Thor and Wonder Woman. People like their superheroes.
I was joking with the fart noises.
Trisha Hole, her favorite movies of the year were The Last Jedi, Coco, The Greatest Showman. That's a controversial pick. Because I've not heard very good things about that movie, but I can't say I haven't seen it. And
I, you know what? I'm a little curious.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. There was a lot of backlash against that movie.
Right.
You know what? But fuck that. It's 2018. 2017 was the year of backlash about everything. Let's do better this year.
Yeah, we'll see. And Thor Ragnarok, of course. Christopher, her husband, his favorites were Logan, Thor Ragnarok, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Valerian, which I commented below.
Ooh,
Valerian is such a Christopher pick. and The Greatest Showman.
I still really want to see Valerian. You know this about me. I don't know if our listeners do. I don't have a lot of physical media.
Mm-hmm.
I pared down. I got rid of a lot of DVDs. So now I just mostly have Blu-rays and... In general, I don't buy physical media unless it's a steelbook.
Which is silly, but yes.
There is a pretty sexy Valerian steelbook, and I haven't seen it, and I don't know if I like it enough to own it. But, like, the steelbook cover, like, I don't know if any of our listeners do this, but they see, like, a cover of a movie or, like, a packaging, and they're just like... I really hope I would like that, but I'm not going to.
I'm
going to
say you definitely want to rent it first.
I do. It's just, Steelbooks are rare, fickle creatures.
They're really not. They're pretty much all they exclusively carry at Best Buy now.
No.
Anyways, Alyssa Whitty.
You don't know. You've never been on eBay at midnight in a fever pitch trying to outbid someone at the last minute.
For a Brazil-only steelbook of 30 Days of Night. Alyssa Whitty, friend of the show, she's also been a guest before. Her favorite movies of the year, Get Out, The Disaster Artist, and Thor Ragnarok. And then she said, oh, fuck, I forgot, Logan. She was really into that. So I kind of feel like if this was a ranked choice vote, Thor Ragnarok is the fan favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just such an appealing movie.
There's a decent amount of votes for Star Wars and Logan, too. But Thor Ragnarok was definitely the runaway winner of the listener.
I think that was mentioned by literally everyone.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. So let's go ahead and get into our honorable mentions. Movies we liked but did not crack our top 10. I'll start. I have a couple here highlighted, and Thor Ragnarok is one of my honorable mentions. I have the horror movie Happy Death Day, which I thought was a really delightful kind of take on the slasher film as sort of redone like Groundhog's Day, and it has a lot of fun with its premise. Downsizing, which was a late entry. I saw that just like a week or plus ago, and you know, Alexander Payne.
It's worth seeing.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. It's a good movie. I'll say this about it as like a mini, like little blurby review. They're selling it as...
God damn it. We have 20 fucking movies to get through.
I know. They're selling it as a comedy. They're selling it as like this goofy movie about people shrinking. They're selling it as Honey, I Shrunk My Life. But it's actually a pretty sophisticated sci-fi. And it tackles a lot of topics in a really interesting and subtle way. Well, sometimes subtle, sometimes not. Blade Runner 2049, I liked. And The Big Sick, which was in my top 10 for a really long time until I saw a movie last night.
All right. My honorable mentions, like you, Blade Runner 2049. Mm-hmm. I liked it. This one also was in my top 10 for a hot minute, but it kind of teetered back and forth, and finally I had to pare mine down, so it just didn't make the cut. In fact, most of these honorable mentions, that's what happened. They were in my list at some point.
Sure.
The Disaster Artist made my honorable mentions. And then there's a theme with these next ones, so save the tweets. I don't need, you know what, I actually don't. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Okay.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay. I'm actually
Wonder Woman.
I'm surprised that none of those made your list.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's the thing. They kind of competed with each other.
Right. So they end up canceling each other out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't say I really liked Wonder Woman more than Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and same with Guardians of the Galaxy. They just, especially Spider-Man and Guardians, in tone and how much I liked them, they were just too similar. Mm. So, and they have franchise baggage. Mm. Like,
yeah, not baggage. It's not baggage, but it's like, we'll see more of you.
Well, yeah, and it's not even that. It's just like... there's so many Spider-Man movies that it's, and this was a great one. This is probably my favorite Spider-Man movie, but I've seen so many other Spider-Man movies that it's not going to stand out as much this year.
Yeah. I think with the case for me, Guardians of the Galaxy, which is probably of the three you just mentioned, the one I like the most, just faded too much for me. Like I enjoyed it a hell of a lot, but over the, you know, X amount of time, I just don't really think about it all that much anymore. And
same. And I think that's in part because of the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not different enough to where I remembered it from all the really good movies that came out this year.
Sure.
And that's the other thing, is there were just a lot of good movies this year. So,
which is a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked all of these. So save the hate.
So of the good movies this year that you like the most, what is your 10th favorite?
Okay, this is my wild card. This is one that you might not have thought.
That's what number 10 is for, the wild cards. Yeah,
number 10, the wild card, was Colossal.
Okay,
with Anne Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
This was an early movie last year,
mm-hmm.
And it just really surprised me. It was really unique and charming and kind of dark and fucked up. All in ways I appreciated. So it got bonus points for creativity.
For sure. Yeah. I have no contention with that pick. My number 10 is also a pretty quirky monster movie from this year. Okja.
Okja! Okja should have totally made my honorable mentions. I just forgot about it. Even though we literally read it off of a Facebook comment.
Just minutes ago. Okja, Bong Joon-ho. I really like this movie. Again, there's a little bit of a Babe the Pig sort of cute animal thing going on in here, but it's also just such a real smart science fiction film. It like all of Bong Joon-ho's movies, it's very political, but not in a preachy way. He's still having fun in the genre stuff. The special effects are really impressive, but also cartoony in sort of a cute way. I just love this movie. I thought it was great. And it actually like affected the way I think about meat consumption. And I have
more than any documentary has.
For sure. For me. And I have considered going at least vegetarian.
I've been trying to reduce my beef and pork.
Mm-hmm.
I like chicken too much.
That would be the hardest one to get rid of, but I think I could probably cut that. I think the hardest thing, I could never go vegan because I love cheese way too much. What is your number 9?
Number 9 was The Big Sick.
Okay, yeah.
I loved it. It really stuck with me. I mean, I love inside baseball movies when it comes to comedy in general. And this one, I think, was better than a lot of stories similar to that because of the love story and, again, the uniqueness of it.
Sure. And how personal it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just, it's very charming. Judd Apatow directed that, right?
He didn't direct it. He produced it.
Okay. Well, because I was going to say it's also, I feel like, one of the more restrained Apatow films, but I couldn't remember if he directed or produced.
No, yeah.
But either way, it still has that sort of Apatow sensibility.
Sure.
But I think with a lot of the fat trimmed off. So I really enjoyed it. It was, it's a great romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm. And it's a unique one, too, because one of the romantic leads is in a coma for the majority of the movie.
Yeah.
It's directed by Michael Showalter of The State.
That's right. That's fucking right.
I was on my list for a really long time, and it was a little bit of a heartbreaker to let it go. But the only reason the only reason why the other movies on my list are a little bit better, I think, is just because structurally the movie gets a little messy towards the middle. There's a point in which I kind of feel like the movie's sort of running around trying to figure out where the narrative is, and then it kind of comes back. But
that's fine. People can go back and listen to our review.
For sure, yeah.
You don't have to just shit on my top 10.
I'm just saying why it didn't crack it. But I do the eccentricities of the movie I love a lot, and I love the characters, obviously. My number 9 is the movie I saw just last night, and it might have been higher if I had a little bit more time to let it sink in. Is Call Me By Your Name.
I fucking knew it.
I put this one off for a while because I'm like, it's kind of long and it's foreign and
it's not foreign.
It's not as foreign as I thought it was, but it is directed by a foreign director. And the last film of his I saw was entirely Italian. So, it's gorgeous. It's everything everyone's saying about it. It's another It's a coming of age tale. It's a coming out tale. It's a summer that changed everything tale. It does.
Yeah, that checks a lot of boxes for you.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot to please me when it comes to these kind of stories. But yeah, you know, Armie Hammer is one of those actors I really root for because.
I want to like him.
Yeah, but he's always
he was
in
great
movies.
In The Social Network, and I feel like he is one of those
this
guys.
This is that movie. The movie that delivers on the promise of Armie Hammer.
Well, maybe he finally fired his agent and got a new one.
Mm-hmm. And also, there's another really great performance by Michael Stuhlbarg. Who was really good in Shape of the Water this year. Like, it's really good.
He's good in everything. He's a goddamn treasure.
And this director, Luca Guadagnino, he did the movie with Tilda Swinton, I Am Love, which is a pretty kooky movie. But the thing he's really good at and he immerses you in it. It's not like the most complicated movie narratively. It's pretty much just a, you know, coming out story and a queer romance, but his filmmaking style, it lights up all your five senses. You can feel the sun on your neck. You can taste the apricots throughout the movie. You can smell all the smells that are going on in the movie. It's such a visceral filmmaker.
Did you see this in 4D?
No, but I did see it with a screen almost 5 feet from my face because it's in these tiny little screening rooms at the Lemley 4. In Santa Monica.
Did you see it in like a nudie booth in an adult
no,
store?
Just a tiny, tiny art house in Santa Monica. What is your number 8?
I'm debating on whether I want to switch it with number 7. I think I'm going to. My number 8 is It.
Okay. Yeah.
Stephen King's It. It was just so refreshing to get a horror movie experience like this in theaters, 'cause I feel like I missed a lot of the like heyday of New Line Cinema, Freddy Krueger horror movies, 'cause I was too young to like get to experience that in a theater. So I enjoy a good, campy, fun, but still spooky monster flick. Mm-hmm. And this was that for me. It was scary enough for me to take it seriously, but not too scary as to give me nightmares forever. Mm-hmm. And again, it has a lot of that coming of age story sensibility.
Summer that changed everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think they just get a lot of they got the feel of the movie right, and it stuck with me. Despite a few flaws, I really enjoyed it. And I also, like, when I'm coming up with my top 10 list, a memorable theatrical experience is an easy way for some... Well, I guess not easy, but that's a way to end up in my top 10 list for sure. Like, if I can remember what was going on, you know, when I saw it in the theaters, that's gonna help
if the movie itself becomes a bookmarker in your life, like an event point.
Yeah like I saw this movie with a couple friends,
there's a memory attached
in the whole debacle about how I ended up seeing it in those weird moving chairs.
Sure. Yeah, the buzzers.
Yeah. So it was all very, very memorable for me. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. It's another one of those for like Guardians of the Galaxy that just sort of faded for me. But I'd be willing to watch it again, actually. Now that it's on DVD, I want to see how I feel about it.
I'll probably get it when it comes out on Steelbook.
I'm sure you will. My number 8 is 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I probably don't have to say all that much about it because I think we both really like this movie a lot and we talked about it already, but just a great crime movie. It's, you know, this year's Fargo. It's this year's No Country. It's a lot of fun. It's also full of really great, complicated performances and characters that are not easy to box into their character archetypes. It's just really smartly written, and it has one of the best payoffs of the year. One of my favorite endings.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. What is your number seven then?
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. last minute, I switched it with It.
Okay.
I just loved it. It was great. So moving on. That was my number seven for all the reasons you said.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The only reason it's not higher on the list, honestly, why it doesn't crack the top five, is almost for the same reasons A Big Sick does. There's a few places where I'm like, okay, movie, what are you doing? And then it kind of comes back. But
yeah, there were just a few that stuck to my ribs a little more, too. Mm-hmm. Although this is a rib sticker, for sure.
For sure, yeah. And it has some of my favorite like set pieces and scenes. It's just, there's some wacky stuff in that movie.
And some great dialogue. I think this might have some of the best dialogue in a movie this year.
Mm-hmm. My number seven is Logan, which might be the first time in a long time that like a mainstream-ish comic book movie has cracked the top 10. Since, I don't know, Dark Knight or something. But it's, you know, it's kind of hard to be totally honest. I haven't seen it since I saw it in theater, which is a long time ago now. But it did stick with me. Just the atmosphere of the movie, the sort of mm-hmm. dread and tension of the movie. I think it's such a classic style action film where it's character driven instead of just set piece driven.
Yeah.
And there's
also some fucking cool set
yeah
pieces,
I mean too. Yeah, when they happen, that you know, it totally pays off. But it's you know, it's hard R, but it's hard R for a reason. And I'm afraid it's gonna, you know, cause a trend of hard R for no reason. But I thought that it really paid that off. It kind of felt like a comic book, you know, that like a Logan story that would be written outside of the regular X-Men universe that you could, you know, mm-hmm. that could be written for an older age. It's one of the only movies, I would say, of the X-Men movie universe movies, with the exception of maybe the first two, that is as sophisticated as the comics can be.
I disagree. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with that, with you about that for Logan. Mm-hmm.
I guess what I mean is, like, all the other X-Men movies, there's still a little bit of, like, okay, regular people out there, this is what mutants are, this is what the X-Men is, before they can get into it. Whereas this movie is just like,
I think
you know all that.
There's two X-Men movies that stand out to me, and that's Logan and Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
I officially decided Days of Future Past is my favorite X-Men movie.
Oh, okay.
Between Logan and Days of Future Past, they come the closest to feeling like actual X-Men comics.
Okay. Yeah. How about your six?
My six was a tie, and there's a reason they're lumped together. Thor Ragnarok and Star Wars The Last Jedi. Both of them are these sort of grand, fun space opera adventures.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't kick either of them out, but I couldn't really place one of them above the other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're both space operas, but doing it in a very different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've heard both of them being criticized for too many jokes, although I disagree,
mm-hmm.
And I will fucking fight anybody on that, but whatever. So Thor Ragnarok and Star Wars The Last Jedi were the two sort of mainstream sci-fi comic book movies that stood out the most to me this year.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars The Last Jedi was, I think, the only time I've gone like, wow, after a Star Wars movie in theaters. And Thor Ragnarok was just a hoot. It is just a hoot and a holler.
Yeah.
I loved it. It's so much fun.
Agreed. I like both of those movies a whole lot. They would be honorable mentions for me as well, for the same reasons you mentioned. My number six is one you've already mentioned, Colossal.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that you thought that was such a controversial pick. No, I think this is clearly one of the best movies of the year, and definitely...
I just kind of thought you, like, all the award shows would have forgotten about it.
No, not a lot of the stuff in my list is awardy. Some of it is, but not all of it. But yeah, Colossal, I think, is... I like genre films, but I like genre films that have some sort of stakes. And mm-hmm. and I think this one does that, and it's also so creative, and I love like the I usually complain about the board game rules of movies when it's like, well, this does this when this happens, and it's really integral to the plot.
They address it so well.
Yeah, it has an emotional anchor in the movie.
Yeah,
and that's what
to me. There's only work. Like one little weak point in the movie, mm-hmm. and that's when they just sort of show the origin.
Yeah, that one little scene. Yeah,
yeah, and it doesn't really detract that much from the movie. It was just like, okay, we don't need this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But
I think I saw the Red Letter Media. They were talking about this movie, and they said that like that felt very studio notes. Like somebody was like, "You got to explain this somewhere."
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I really I love the movie. Anne Hathaway is great in it, and so is Jason Sudeikis. Surprisingly, like not an actor that I get generally excited about. I think he's just sort of a dude. He's basically this generation's Vince Vaughn. But I thought he was really good in that. I think of
Jason Sudeikis similar. I kind of place him with Jason Bateman.
Yeah,
like. If he's cast well, if he's cast to type, he's going to be good for what you want him.
Mm-hmm. But this movie was one of the first movies he had a performance. He wasn't just there to be Jason Sudeikis. He actually had
exactly
more to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But they still, you know, definitely cast him to type.
And there's great like CGI monster kaiju stuff.
Yeah, always gets a bonus in my book.
Yeah, and it's like one of the funniest movies of the year, while also being like this great emotional whatever. Like joke per joke, probably made me laugh more than a lot.
Yeah, it has some pretty good, pretty great moments.
Mm-hmm. You're number five.
All right, now we're getting into it. Lady Bird.
I have no problem with that. Yeah, it's a really good movie.
It's my number five. It's heartfelt. It's endearing. It's really smart and well directed. Mm-hmm. It's just great. It's just such an honest portrayal of life as a millennial.
Mm-hmm. And as a teenager, generally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, but specifically, I think it speaks to our generation mm-hmm. of teenagers, but, you know, it does it well enough that I think future generations will still be able to relate to it. I just think that we specifically connected with it in a way that future generations might not be able to as much.
Right.
So, you know, sort of like... we were a little too young to really experience a lot of the stuff of Clueless, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be of that generation, totally, yeah.
Exactly. Whereas Lady Bird was, like, written specifically for our generation. Mm-hmm. So, that definitely connected with me. But even besides that, it's just a damn good movie. It's really funny and dramatic. And I think one of the best character pieces of this year, mm-hmm. like just with character as story.
For sure. Timothy Chalamet, who was in the lead in Call Me By Your Name, also has a part in Lady Bird. He plays the...
he's one of my favorite parts in Lady Bird. Mm-hmm.
My number five is Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of the Water. He just won the best director at the Golden Globes, which it's a Golden Globes. Like, it's not a real thing. Everyone knows that. But
yeah, but it's still, you know, cool because monster movies don't typically get awards, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're monster movies like that aren't usually even nominated.
Yeah, and it feels, and I'm looking at my top 10 here, and I have a lot of this kind of theme, which is genre movies done with depth.
Yeah.
Which usually, that's sort of a go-to for me. Like, I love like a good coming-of-age movie, I love a good drama, all of that stuff, but I really love it. If you can like do a genre film and take a formula we've seen 100 times before and make me think of it completely differently, then you've done something really special. And Guillermo del Toro has done that more than once in his career, and he's done it yet again here. It's just a really great love story. It's a really great allegory about being ostracized or being a marginalized person in American society. It's a really great Cold War kind of fairy tale. Obviously beautiful set design and production design, monster design, all that stuff we expect from Guillermo del Toro. But now actually with a lot of substance there as well. Your number four?
The Shape of Water. yeah, for all those reasons. I think this is definitely one of Guillermo del Toro's best. It's right up there with Pan's Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I mentioned this when we reviewed it, but I also think that it's really cool that it could serve as a direct sequel to Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, you know, there was some movie homework I wanted to do before I saw it, and I've actually never seen Creature from the Black Lagoon, believe it or not.
All the archetypes are there. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a guy that's basically like Michael Shannon's character, who's like on the boat in this riverboat trip. Mm. It's very subtle, but it's like Shape of the Water was. It's almost like a what's the word?
An homage?
No, a postmodern sequel to it. Yeah. It's sort of a sequel in the way that Superman Returns is a sequel to...
to the Richard Donner Superman movies.
Yeah. It's like this could pick up right after that story. Mm-hmm. But even besides that, it's just a great movie for all the reasons you mentioned. It also, I think, has possibly some of the best acting performances in a Guillermo del Toro film. He's not normally thought of as like an actor's director, and I think that's what really helped him stick the landing on this one.
For sure, yeah.
He has the high concept, but this has the emotional depth.
Well, it had to. Like, it was, I mean, terrible yeah. pun, but it's a sink or swim situation with...
No.
You don't allow it.
No. With, revoke your podcasting card. We're done.
with the acting, because the premise is so absurd that if you're not totally invested in those characters, you're not going to go with it at all. So the acting had to deliver, and totally does.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, it'd be very easy for this to get away from you.
Well, good. I'm glad we agree there. And we'll probably agree on the next one too. Another genre film done with a lot of purpose. Jordan Peele's Get Out. And
is your number three?
Is my number four. We're on number four right now.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. You know, I think I said around October when I did the episode with my guest Sam Weinman, who is a horror film filmmaker, Get Out might not be the best movie of the year, but it is sort of unofficially become the movie of the year of 2017. It wouldn't have felt so prescient and important as it did when it came out. You know, just a few months after the election, after, you know, a highly racialized election. And with all of this crazy alt-right stuff going on all over the place, all these hoods or people being hooded in broad daylight. You know, here you have a movie that tackles racism head on, but it also isn't afraid to be like a surprisingly funny, dark comedy at the same time. And also, you know, sort of a pulpy, goofy, Twilight Zone-y sort of horror sci-fi. And it, you know, it makes a ton of movie references all the way through. Very cine literate. And it's also from a first time director who totally knocks it out of the ballpark. I mean, this is top notch stuff. And I think it's, you know, one of those horror films or one of those, you know, genre movies that people are going to talk about in as being a highlight of its genre, you know, years and decades down the road. I think people are going to look at that as like a, you know, point when something happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with all of that.
I'm glad you do. Your number three.
My number three is Baby Driver. I just loved this damn movie. Mm-hmm. It is a rock rolling heist caper flick, firing on all cylinders. I think one of the first things that happened after, oh man, that was,
yeah, that was almost bad as my,
that was not
swim.
Intentional. That was not intentional. Yeah, I just loved it. It's so much fun. I think it might be, it's definitely up there in Edgar Wright's personal canon. And it's just cool. This movie just exudes cool. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I know I've said a lot of the movies on my list are pretty fun. Mm-hmm. I think this might have been the most fun I had in the theater as far as... It's just a cool movie. I don't know what else to say.
I'm going to give this movie the award of faded the most for me. I mean, I had, you know, we reviewed it together. I was sort of mixed on it then. And now I almost, it barely registers for me. Like, I think it's a technical accomplishment, and I think that I love the editing, the hip-hop editing of the movie, and the way that he tracks the needle drops along with the editing, and all of that stuff is really cool, to use your words, but I don't think that it's much else, personally. But I would be willing to look at it again to see if there's anything that exists underneath the aesthetics.
Is it because Kevin Spacey's in it?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's really just when I think about the movie, or I'm thinking like the memories I have of watching it, all I can think about is like, yeah, that's a cool editing thing. That's a cool car chase. Not a ton in the way of character work. If we're comparing it to Edgar Wright's movies, if you're, you know, the Cornetto movies especially, those are movies that I think do all the stuff that Baby Driver does, maybe not as technically well as Baby Driver does it, but it does all of those things and has story concerns, which I'm not sure the Baby Driver has as much. But, you know, I get it. Right. People like that movie.
I guess we're going to have to disagree to agree on that one. I loved it. That was great.
I want to rent it. I want to rent it and look at it again because I wonder how it would play a second time. Okay. All right. So my third favorite film of the year was an early contender. This was my number one almost all year until the last few months. But it is the Belgian horror film Raw.
That's right. And you fucking weirdo.
It is a freaky movie.
I haven't seen it.
And, you know, there's a lot of... It's on Netflix, and I do highly recommend it, but there was a lot of talk coming out of the Toronto Film Festival about how it made people pass out and how it was so disgusting and, you know, barf bags being served at the at screenings as like a gimmick and stuff. And it's super gross, but it's also like such a artfully constructed metaphor of coming of age. And it the way that, you know, the writer director, right, Julia de Kernow, the way that she uses cannibalism and the craving of meat as an allegory for a young woman's sexual discovery is just, it's really brilliant. And there's some really great stage sequences and scenes, and the way that she ratchets up the tension and scenes subtly. And it's also one of the best, like, movies about sibling rivalry and sisterhood. I grew up with sisters. You did not, but I mean, I guess it's similar to like brotherly rivalry. But they're, you know, the relationship between the main character and her sister through the movie is so interesting, and the way they play off of each other and influence each other and compete. And yeah, I love this movie. It's disgusting and it's filthy, but it's one of the best movies of the year.
Yeah. So my number two was Logan. I really liked this movie. For all the reasons you said, it's an awesome genre picture. I think it's one of the smartest and subtlest superhero movies to date.
Mm-hmm.
It almost isn't even a superhero movie. It's almost more of just like a sci-fi thriller.
I think when we reviewed it and we talked about it, I posited the idea of a genre of a genre emergence of post superhero, in that it's a superhero mm-hmm. movie that is only a superhero movie by association, but it as a movie, it's just kind of it being a superhero movie is almost incidental.
Yes. Yeah. It's more like based on superhero stuff,
right?
Which I mean, and Logan Wolverine is a character who you can get that out of. He has so many different stories and types of stories to tell. You know, we've seen a Wolverine samurai movie. We've seen, you know what I mean. So this mm-hmm. genre isn't past the character,
mm-hmm.
But I loved it. I think it's one of the grittiest, coolest action movies in a long time. It reminded me so much of Terminator 2, which I think is one of the greatest action movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my number two.
Yeah, I have no problem with that pick. My number two is Sean Baker's The Florida Project. And...
Really?
Yeah, I this movie tore me apart. The Florida Project is another beautiful film. I love Sean Baker's style of filmmaking. He's another one who you know, he uses non-actors and he likes to shoot on
location.
He's
the iPhone guy, right?
Yeah. He did a Tangerine, which was shot on an iPhone. He did a few movies before that in traditional digital or whatever. And the Florida Project's actually on 35. So, you know, he really went the other direction as far as that goes. But, and it's beautiful, beautiful cinematography and very vibrant colors. And he uses this, he almost kind of turns, it's almost a little twee to say, but he almost sort of turns like these, you know, these brightly painted up hotels near Disney World and all of these little locations that these, you know, underprivileged people live in, and turns it into a fairy tale land because it's seen from the perspective of children without having to do that in any kind of like over the top gauzy, you know, like magical realist sort of way. It just sort of does that on its own. And, you know, from these great performances from non-actors, they're all totally believable. You forget that 10 minutes into the movie. I mean, this movie just like wrecked me emotionally. And you know, Willem Dafoe, like really great, performance. That's very off type. And, this is one of the ones that like definitely affected me the most as far as like thinking about it later and while I was watching it. And
yeah, this was one of the ones that, I regretted not being able to see yet.
Mm-hmm. Sean Baker is such a humane director. He never feels like a tourist in these worlds that he's inhabiting. It doesn't feel like he's, you know, being a Jane Goodall, like with the camera and studying them from afar. He really puts himself in there and he really wants to understand what's going on and he really wants to be a part of it. He doesn't hermetically seal it. He doesn't turn them into you know, heroes either. You know, it's not a Cinderella story. The Florida Project is one of my favorite movies of the year. My second favorite movie of the year, officially.
Cool.
Are we on number one?
Yes. Now we're on number one. But my number one movie of the year was Get Out. Number one with a bullet. I could have said that when I saw it back in like March or February when it came out. I was just floored by it. I think it's a damn near perfect movie. It's for all the reasons you said and more. Like, it's just so well done and so much attention to detail. I mean, it's almost Kubrickian in the level of detail he puts into the dialogue and the setting and the scenery. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I think it's funny, it's scary, it's incredibly relevant, and it just stuck with me. And as far as fun movie going experiences went, I saw it with a packed house, almost entirely black theater, and it was so much fun to watch it with like the target audience, you know. It was great. I mean people were laughing, but also everyone was respectful too, like you know, during the tense part people were waiting on bated breath, and this movie isn't built on jump scares, which I appreciate there, but there's a couple little ones, and there was one that, like, you know, got the whole audience going. And then at the very end, I don't remember exactly when, but there's a, and I'm not going to spoil it in case anyone still hasn't seen it. Something happens to one of the antagonists, and there was like a moment of silence, and someone in the audience just went, "Yeah, bitch!" And it just was perfect. Absolutely perfect timing. It was like that level of interactivity. And that just added to the experience of seeing this movie that I already thought was fantastic. That was my number one. Get Out.
And I've seen that one a few times, and I think of a lot of these, and maybe it's one of the reasons why it's high on my list as well, is that it I mean, there's a twist or whatever. So anytime there's a movie where there's a twist, repeat viewings change things. But this one, like the details, like you're talking about, like things that you didn't notice the first time watching it, reveal themselves more and more. And
if you've watched the movie, I posted on our Facebook page this little video of Jordan Peele reading some like fan theories and people like noticing details and stuff in the movie. If you've seen the movie, that's a fun video to check out.
For sure.
Because there's stuff that I didn't pick up on that. There's so many layers, I think, to this movie.
For sure. Yeah. Great. And my number one, as you predicted, was
twice.
Twice. And actually, you know what? I knew your number one too, because I listened to that podcast you did. The Adamant podcast.
The Adamant podcast, not the Adam Ant.
No, podcast. You did a podcast with the famous British New Romantic
pop
guy.
Star.
Yeah. Lady Bird. Lady Bird is my favorite film of the year. Greta Gerwig's directorial debut feature.
I'm not mad at that.
It's just a perfect film. Like, and that's really what it comes down to when I'm talking number one material is, did it do everything right? Could I change a single frame? And almost no.
See, I would make the case with Lady Bird that you could.
We've talked about it before. There's a little bit of a coda at the end that's kind of annoying. But
yeah,
up to that point, it is perfect. And again, like...
And that's a small hang up.
Yeah,
it does not ruin the movie.
Yeah. And
yeah, it...
And I would only noticing it because it was riding that tightrope so perfectly all the way through.
Yeah.
And you know, like it gives you the gives me the gamut of emotions. You know, it's very funny. It's also heartbreaking. It's also complicated. Like, the, you know, the relationships between the mother-daughter relationship with Laurie Metcalf and Saoirse Ronan, and the best friend's relationship, and then the competing friend's relationship, the, you know, the first crush versus the second boyfriend, and all of those things are so honest and so relatable. And it's such a, I feel like this movie is such a mirror. Like, everyone who watches it get, like, is able to draw a personal experience that's totally different, because friend of the show, Ashley Hitchcock, just recently watched it and tweeted at me, because I've been telling her to see it, and, or not tweeted, she texted me her response to the movie, and I thought, for sure, you're going to, like, you're going to relate to the school musical stuff, and that's going to be your way into the movie, or, like, the mother-daughter stuff, maybe. No, like, the thing that, that she got out of it was, she was all like, I thought that I wanted to throw all of those old experiences away. I thought that I didn't care that much about where it came from and blah, blah, blah. And it really, and it actually like broke her heart that she took that for granted, you know, her high school experiences. And, and it just, and I was like, this fucking movie, man.
You know what? It also gets bonus points for reminding me that Crash by Dave Matthews is a good song.
I'm not going to go at the bridge too far, maybe. I think it's used beautifully. It's used wonderfully.
Crash into me.
I love the, I
mean, I'm not sad that Dave Matthews is gone from the public zeitgeist. But that was one of his better songs.
Sure. Yeah. I love that it has, like, a bunch of needle drops in the movie, so, like, soundtracky stuff from that time or a little bit before it. And they are these kind of cheesy sort of pop radio songs, but they're used, like, sincerely. It's not ironic.
Oh, yeah.
The heart of this movie is just huge.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with anything, any of that. It's a great movie.
And usually my favorite movie of the year would be something like a Raw, would be some, like, difficult, something fucking
weird,
you know,
and gross and
foreign,
horrifying
sort of thing.
I'm telling you, man.
Because usually when I'm looking at my best movie of the year, I look for what movie came out that I think advances cinema in some new way, or at least is trying. And this one, I'm going to say, doesn't. Like, it is definitely within a very comfortable genre, but it's just doing it so well.
Yeah. Well, I think there were so many other movies on both of our lists that did that way more. Sure. Like Colossal, or Get Out, or Shape of Water, for sure. All were, I think, more innovative and progressive as far as cinema as an art form. But yeah, Lady Bird is just, it's so damn solid.
100%. So that is our top 10s of 2017.
Yeah.
But before we get out of here, we got to talk about the movies we maybe didn't like as much. And yeah. I'm going to, you know, I didn't see as many movies as I normally see this year. I think my final count was something like 46, which is fairly low for me. But, and because of that, I didn't see as many bad movies, thankfully. But I did see at least seven movies.
Well, and there were so many good ones this year that we kind of were able to avoid the ones that we knew were going to be clunkers. Like, we didn't see The Mummy. We didn't see the new Transformers.
I didn't see Baywatch.
You know, there were a few.
Yeah. We didn't see the Emoji Movie, like the movies that are cool to hate, and, you know, the ones that are sort of...
We didn't see Boss Baby, although that's on Netflix now, so some homework might be coming up.
You're sort of low-key obsessed with that movie. And and what's that one with Kevin Spacey as a cat? We didn't see that either.
Yeah. I'm okay avoiding that one.
The only two that are on my bad list, I guess, that are like dishonorable mentions that are not on my official bottom five are The Ghost in the Shell remake and Beauty and the Beast remake.
Okay.
And which, again, like, you know, they're not terrible. They're just aggressively mediocre.
Yeah. So I The two honorable mentions I have for dishonorable, kind of cheating. I know this movie didn't come out in 2017, but I saw it in 2017, so that's why it's getting an honorable mention. Funny Games, fucking hate it.
You just want to remind me that you hated that movie. That was like 10 years ago, but sure.
Yeah. this one also, I didn't dislike it. I even kind of liked it. I'm just putting it on my dishonorable mentions so that people shut the fuck up about it. And that's Dunkirk.
Oh, boo. I'm booing you on that. That's actually on my good list. It's on my good list. It's just, I just don't like love it.
Here's the thing. It's a good movie. Mm-hmm. It is a good movie. I'm saying that, but it's ending up on my dishonorable mentions just because
You feel like you have to skew the data?
Yeah, I don't get it. So that's a little wrench I'm throwing out. It's not a bad movie. If people enjoy that movie, I get it.
I would say the exact same things about Baby Driver as I would say about Dunkirk. It's technically fine, but it doesn't emotionally do anything for me.
All right. Let's. I get it. You don't have to keep fighting my top 10, you son of a bitch. Why don't you go watch your cannibal movie, you freaky deaky?
Maybe I will.
I'm telling you, 5 years' time, I'm going to record the last Jabber on the Drone podcast, and I'm going to tell our listeners that you're in jail for being a weird serial killer.
I watch way less horror movies than Richard. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the bottom five then. What is your number five? Oh, one last dishonorable mention. Didn't make my bottom five only because the release of the movie is kind of ambiguous. I looked it up. I researched it to see when it came out. And it could technically be a 2016 movie because it had a long life in festivals. Then it had a official release in 2017, but then it was in festivals again. So I wasn't sure. So, but that documentary we reviewed with Patrick, The American Anarchist.
I didn't even think about that one. I guess I didn't realize that that was.
It was like I think it had maybe like the smallest of official release, but didn't care for that at all. So, what is your number five?
Yeah.
Of your bottom five.
Again, this, I actually had a hard time with my bottom five. I actually just tacked this on last minute because you insisted that I have five. Mm-hmm. I didn't hate it. It's just it was just sort of nothing to me. Was the Beauty and the Beast remake? Mm-hmm. It was fine. I didn't really get much out of it, and. Yeah, so I'll just leave it at that. It's not awful. It's not terrible. I think Disney has done worse live-action remakes. Cinderella.
For sure.
But I don't... Just watch the cartoon.
It's just so unnecessary. And it's like the Cinderella, but all of them, they're so cynically made. It's just all about money, and it's all about opportunity and cashing in on nostalgia. And those are the reasons why I just can't get behind those movies.
Yeah.
And that one especially. But my number five was the Tupac biopic, All Eyes on Me. It's not a... totally painful movie watching experience. It's just so on the nose. It's so biopic 101. It's too long. A lot of the performances don't hold up. It gets pretty corny. It's at a point it becomes a College Humor video or a Funny or Die video without the humor. But it has one good central performance in it that almost saves it, but doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all of that.
What's your number four?
My number four was the... again, almost all of mine have some sort of caveat or little asterisk next to them. This barely counts because I don't think anyone saw it. But it was El Camino Christmas, the Netflix original.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not good. It's really bad, really cheesy. I don't even think it's worth being on a bottom five list, is how little I thought of this movie.
Yeah.
There's no way anyone's actually going to watch it besides us. And you shouldn't.
You know what's funny though? When I upload the episodes on Podbean, I always include links to the trailers for whatever movie we're talking about. And I looked up the trailer for El Camino Christmas on YouTube, and I started reading the comments. And there was all these like excited comments about it. It's like, oh, I'm getting a real Tarantino vibe from this. Like, I just was started laughing.
Yeah, Jesus. No, it's not any of that. It's just bad. I think of my bottom five, it is without a doubt the worst movie on my bottom
five.
On
a technical level,
Yeah, just on all levels. It's just that it barely counts. Yeah. Like, Netflix isn't promoting it. They didn't do shit for it. Yeah, just don't bother. There's no way people are going to just run across this movie.
No, unless it's a Christmas thing and they're just looking for anything with the word Christmas in it.
That's literally how I found it.
Exactly. My number four is Zack Snyder's Justice League. And, what's funny about this movie is, like, I've heard some people say, like, this is the one that, like, redeems all these characters. I mean, obviously, Wonder Woman was a fine film, and a lot of people liked it a lot. And it is the exception to the DC Cinematic Universe rule so far. But, you know, and I think some people wanted to like it so much that they sort of willed themselves to. But it's not good. It just because it's not an abomination to cinema as a whole doesn't mean that it's a good movie. It's just a pretty poorly made, you know, superhero team-up movie. It takes absolutely no risks. It's ugly to look at, has a stupid villain, that has a stupid plot. It feels like it's just sort of plodding along. Like, honestly, I've seen some of those direct-to-DVD, like 70-minute animated DC movies that have more thought put into it narratively.
Oh, yeah. Those are way better. I would go on record as saying all of those are better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've seen some pretty bad ones of those too, but it's at least as bad as the worst ones. I guess they're lower
stakes, yeah.
Yeah, like if it were the background story of a Justice League video game for like Super NES, then it would be acceptable just as far as getting from one level to another. But it's as like
That's
a movie,
what
it's
feels like
as a movie, you're just like, all right, whatever. Find the glowing boxes. How long is this?
Yeah. Well, Cassidy, I agree with you because my number three is Justice League. For all those reasons you mentioned, it's just not good. There's not enough redeeming qualities to save it, but it's not the shit show that Batman v Superman is. It's just kind of boring and just like bad and mediocre. There's just especially in a year where, you know, I had to almost completely disqualify comic book movies from my top 10 list because there were so many good ones. You know, they all got honorable mention status except this one. That says something. Like, and I am the target audience. So, you know, the people that are like, oh, it's not for the critics, it's not for the fuck you, I'm barely a critic. And I still thought it was trash.
Yeah, you know, I love me a good superhero movie. We both love Logan. We both like the Thor movie a whole lot. No, yeah, at this point, this far into the genre, it has no excuse to be this simple and this stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
You said we shouldn't count Netflix movies, but I got two on my list, and the first one I'm going to mention is the Death Note movie.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I almost did. It's real bad. And, you know, there's a...
To be clear, I wasn't saying we should discount Netflix movies.
No, I know. But
they're trying to get in the game more. I was discounting El Camino Christmas because it wasn't even, like, pushed out or hyped by them. It was it's churned it out to have content
product
to fill.
Product, yeah. Yeah. And Death Note, unfortunately, feels the same way. Given that it comes from such a famous anime or a famous manga, and people have a lot of, you know, strong feelings about it. And it's a cool concept that I think you could pull off pretty easily, and it had a decent director behind it with Adam Wingard. Totally wasted. Everything, it just feels confused and muddled and tonally all over the place, and it doesn't even maximize its genre appeal. It's just kind of a mess and not in a good way.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It feels like a movie that a 13-year-old edgelord who just writes his own, like, sketchy fan fiction in the back of his, you know, notepad in class and doesn't want people to notice him, that, like, that's the script he would have come up with.
I will say I am pretty excited to hear that episode when it eventually pops up on How Did This Get Made?
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's like that type of movie.
Yeah, it's just, it feels like 16 people were making 16 different movies.
Yeah.
What's your number two? Second least favorite movie of the year.
Number two was All Eyes on Me. You mentioned it earlier. Yeah, it's just, and I feel bad that it's such a bad movie because I do mm-hmm. think everyone involved was earnestly trying to make the best movie they could. The guy who plays Tupac, is great. It's just not enough to save a really mediocre script and some really mm-hmm. bad direction. Yeah, so it's just not good. There is a sort of a section in the middle that sort of starts to turn into at least a passable biopic, but mm-hmm. it is framed by such a sloppy beginning and ending that is just sort of unforgivable.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame and says everything about the movie that when it works the most, it's when it rests on formula.
Yeah, exactly. When it's the most conventional is when it's passable. Working
a little bit.
And there's a couple fun sequences, like when he's sort of doing his rap montage, and then there's, you know, like the stripper and the... hotel room stuff. So I mean there's some camp to be had from it. Like, I think it could be a good bad movie to watch. It is kind of fun on that level because it's
riffable. It's riff tracks.
Yeah, it's so self-serious that it's kind of fun to play with. But it's I feel bad that this one's on my list because I wanted it to be a better movie, especially after Straight Outta Compton. I was really hoping that this would just further the 90s rap Cineverse.
Unfortunately not. Number two for me is El Camino Christmas.
It's so bad.
It's just so bad. But, you know, it is kind of fun bad in the same way that we mentioned with All Eyes on Me and Death Note.
See, I didn't think so. I actually thought it was sort of anti-fun bad.
I mean, there's a point in the movie when you realize that it's just, like, how off the rails it is and doesn't know that it is.
Yeah, once
it... And it is, like, committed to keeping, you know, this path that is just going way, way far away from what it should be. But I don't know. It agreed. It barely exists. It's not even really worth talking about, but I did see it and they did release it and there are big stars in it.
Too big for it to be as bad as it is.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
there's a point in time when Jessica Alba was A-list for some reason.
Yeah. That was a while ago.
Yeah. But I'm still, you know, like,
yeah. Now she owns a product line of safe, non-toxic soaps.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So she has that going for her.
Yeah.
What is your least favorite movie of 2017?
I have a sneaking suspicion this might be yours as well, because you haven't mentioned it yet. My least favorite movie of 2017 was Alien Covenant.
Samesies. I
goddamn hated this movie. It was trash. It's not an Alien movie. It's barely a Prometheus sequel. It is just garbage. It's just, what the fuck are you doing, Ridley Scott? This was the only one that was almost completely unredeemable for me.
Of the Alien movies or of this list?
Of my list. Like, each of the other ones has a little caveat. Like, I think El Camino Christmas is a worse movie, but it's so not substantial. But Alien Covenant was like, this is it. I think I'm done with the Alien franchise. Unless we have to watch more of them for this fucking podcast, I'm not going to see one on my own volition again because of this movie. Like, I know it's over. It's done. And granted, I'm learning this lesson 4 movies too late, but it's gross and not in the way an Alien movie should be. And I don't mean that in like content, violence, blood and gore gross. I mean it in a script is so bad. The action is so boring. The characters are so stupid that it's just, there's nothing here. It's not even a movie. It's barely a movie.
And it's so self-serious, too, like, on top of all that. Like, you know, it's made by Ridley Scott, so it has this kind of austerity to it. And he you know, like, the prologue with Michael Fassbender and Guy Pearce at the piano and stuff. And he thinks he's making, like, this great film, and there's all of these long speeches about like life and creation and religion and all of this stuff, and it's just frustratingly awful, and it just keeps getting worse.
Like, at least the bad Alien movies you know, at least have some fun Alien action going on.
Yeah, like, they're at least like pulpy.
Yeah, like give me Alien Resurrection over this all day air day, because at least it's got some camp, some cheese, some goo. This, like, the aliens don't even show up till the end. We got these weird little white monkey things. Stop trying to create new creatures without Geiger.
I
said, it's barely a Prometheus sequel because it just skips every hanging thread from Prometheus. It's like, oh, yeah, this character's dead, and I've just sort of been living on a rock.
It almost feels like it went, like, you wouldn't think it was from the same creative team, because it almost disregards everything they built up in that movie, which, you know, like, a lot of people don't like, but I had some hopes for, and then this just dashed those.
I would have been fine with that, because I wasn't super into Prometheus. I would have been fine with that if this was at least, like, what he had promised, a good Alien movie, and it's not.
No.
When the alien shows up finally at the end, like late in the third act, it's not scary. They show it way too much. Almost
it's bolted on.
Yeah. Almost all the deaths are completely predictable, and there's not even any characters worth caring about in the movie, with the possible exception of The only even minor pluses this movie had was Danny McBride in a cowboy hat, basically playing Danny McBride, but a little more serious. And Michael Fassbender self-playing a flute.
Yeah, teaching himself how to play a flute and then kissing himself in this bizarre moment when the movie is so far up its own ass that it, like, literally is making contact with itself.
Yes. That was, like, the only part of the movie that I enjoyed on I mean, granted, not for the reasons.
That's when the movie becomes delusionally bad.
Yes, and like, what the fuck is actually going on? Like, I totally lost track of whatever the story was supposed to be at that point. Oh, and Billy Crudup, he's giving it his all. He deserves a better movie than this.
I'd say the same for Catherine Waterston too. But yeah, it's so bad, and it just like. Every scene that passes is worse than the one before it.
It really is. This is a movie that we're watching get worse in real time.
For real. And then by the end, it's just like, I give up on trying to be something. Here's some slasher movie garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's easily the worst movie I saw.
Yeah. By far.
And the most offensive.
When we had to come up with a top five, or bottom five, I should say. I was like, I can't even think of anything besides Alien Covenant that I hated so much.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, next year we'll have other... I feel like I have to, like, you know, tie this up somehow.
I mean, here's the thing. Overall, 2017 was, I think, a big step up from 2016.
Agreed.
There was a lot more good than bad, especially near the end of the year. There was even a lot of the awards movies I'm genuinely pretty excited about. I'm looking at the lineup for 2018, and I think it's going to be somewhere between 2017 and 2016.
There's some surprises still to come. You know, the festivals, like the early festivals, like Sundance and stuff, hasn't happened yet. That's when we start to hear about the cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because even the tentpole movies, like, I don't have a lot of hopes for most of those this year, which is fine.
Mm. Yeah. But I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about the movies coming forward. But let's wrap it up. First of all, I'll let you go. What do you want to have people follow you on?
Follow me on the socials. You can follow me on Twitter at Keith Foster Kid. Follow me on Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. You can check out my website at www.keithfosterkid.com. You might start to notice a theme there. I've got a couple shows coming up. I think I have an improv show coming up. Let me get the date. Next Thursday, January 18th, at Finest City Improv at like 10 o'clock at night. So I'm sure I'll see you out there. And then on January 30th, I'm doing the All-Star Comedy Jam in Bonita. It's at 4076 Bonita Road. I'm sure the venue has a name, but I don't know it because I'm bad at self-promotion.
If they follow you on Twitter, you'll share it.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, and I definitely plug my shit on there. So, and if you check out my website, I have a calendar.
Cool.
Which has all the information you need if you want to come see a show, and I hope you do.
If you have anything, any opinions about anything we said today, or if you want to conflict with our lists, if you have any kind of argument there, you can do so at our email at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, like I said, facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can find the show's archives at jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can also listen to us and stream us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, the Windows Podcast Network, and Google Play. You can read my stuff that I do for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can see some of the reviews I provided, including my review for Raw at the MacGuffin, mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And we have friends who also do podcasts you should be listening to, including Rod and Denise at the Listening Party, which they just launched their new format. I think they're two episodes in already. And I haven't listened to them yet, but I'm excited to see what's going on there. Denise is almost wrapping up her solo podcast, The Mascot Diaries. I think the 50th episode's about to drop. I know she's recorded it already. and check out Patrick and Dennis slash Patrick and you, Keith, at Almost Educational, and Patrick and his father at Make Dad Read Comics. Check out Bill and Brian over at the Great Albums Podcast. Check out friend of the show, Mike Fallick, who did a few episode with us at Let's Start a Cult. And I guess the Adamant podcast. You should be listening to that.
And you can go to his website, iamadamconnie.com, and I know you can get it there. Cool. I think he also records his on YouTube. So you can like watch him do this podcast, which is kind of fun.
And that's it. So what's the new sign off for 2018?
Oh man, you asked me to come up with one for 2018. I feel like one might organically emerge. But for now, we're going to go out Boss Baby style. Cookies are for closers.
All right. Bye.